When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're chatting everything Raptors in this edition of Hoopsology. Matt and Justin welcome producer and host of The Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Emmett Mann, to discuss how the Raptors are adjusting to losing Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam, a new head coach, basketball culture in Canada, and the recent controversial calls within the NBA. Hoopsology is presented by Balls Life. You're going to really enjoy this interview as we discuss everything Toronto Raptors in terms of how they're trying to make the play-in despite all their kind of recent struggles as of late. Emmett was a great guest, and again, I sound like a broken record, but it is a must-listen if you're a fan of the Toronto Raptors. This is a great interview. And now, without further ado, Emmett Mann. He is the producer and host of The Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We welcome Emmett Mann onto Hoopsology. Welcome.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Appreciate it very much. How are we all doing? How are things? I understand you guys are south of me, which is awesome. I'm surprised you guys are reaching out to me. I was just expressing that beforehand, but hey, I mean, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, happy for you to come on. When just looking at all the teams in the NBA, I've always been compelled about the Raptors. I just think they're one of the coolest teams in the NBA, and just especially with just the growth of basketball within Canada and just everything that's happened with the Raptors recently in this era of the game. I think they are always relevant. So just want to kind of pick your brain on several topics. So Sure. Let's start with just the All-Star break is now concluded, and the Raptors have won 3 in a row at this recording of this podcast. So we haven't talked too much Raptors just to admit that up front. So can you just give us kind of a rundown in terms of how you felt the Raptors have fared through the All-Star break, and then what you're seeing in terms of their expectations of possibly making the play-in tournament? Is that a possibility within the Eastern Conference, or are you looking for just more development of just the younger core of the Raptors and just them adjusting with missing just Fred VanVleet and then Pascal Siakam as well?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely want to make the play-in. They've said that already. That is their goal. How legitimate it is, how likely it is, I mean, that's another conversation. They're currently 4 games out of the play-in picture with 2 teams to jump. But once Trae Young went down, unfortunately, for a month or so, it does seem like there's a bit of a window that maybe they can slip in there if they can get on a bit of a win streak. And they are on a 3-game win streak, the first one they've had all season. And they're pretty pumped about that. I'm sure everyone kind of saw the headlines about a pizza party. Just to make it clear, the meat, something, I'm not sure who came up with it, but Darko didn't offer a pizza party. He offered to take them out to dinner. It was going to be like a nice dinner. He wasn't going to get them pizza. I think someone on social kind of made a joke out of it, and it just kept on keeping on until, you know, they finally got a 3-game win streak going, and they've had a few 2-game win streaks, but they never got to 3. And so the joke just kept on persisting. And then here we are now where they actually got it. And obviously everyone, I ran with it too. It was kind of funny, the pizza party thing, but anyways, they do have 3 in a row. They've been playing great. Like, honestly, I mean, it was Rick Carlisle after the game yesterday against the Pacers, is that he said, hey, I mean, these guys, like, they're legit. And that means something, right? This is a coach that's seen the Raptors already a couple times, and he also saw them, a few weeks ago. So he has an idea of what that team was then and what they are now. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to be too much of an optimist here, because the season has been a very odd season, back-to-back odd season for the Toronto Raptors, it feels like. But this current team, it feels like they're gaining an identity. And we haven't been able to decisively say that, I think, for a few seasons. And even if there was an identity, it wasn't something that we want to buy into, because we didn't really believe it was going to work, right? Vision 6-9 is like definitely gone, and they doubled down on it a few times, and it just wasn't necessarily the way that they were going to be able to win games. But under this new coach, this new system, offensively, defensively, I think we're seeing a lot of buy-in. The players they brought in at the deadline over the course of this season through some trades with Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, they're just great fits for what Darko's system, what he wants the skill set to be of the players that he brings in. It's a perfect match, and I think we're seeing a lot of players enjoy being in the system currently.
So you mentioned Darko, and I saw the post game where they were talking about the pizza party. I think he said, "I'm going to take you guys out to something nicer than just pizza."
Yes.
And yes. I just want to the vibe in that locker room. I noticed, despite the record, it was very kind of easygoing, and just like I realized they just won the game, but just I don't know. I just got a sense that this is like a tight locker room. Am I far off on that, or do you just think they're just happy because they won? And the vibe seemed different compared to other NBA locker rooms. Their camaraderie.
Yeah, I mean, a bit of column A, a bit of column B. I think they are gaining some chemistry, and I think they wanted to get players on the same timeline. And you can just imagine if you have a bunch of players who are 32, 30, 29, and then a bunch of guys who are like 21, 22, they can coexist and they can be cool, but will they have like a lot of chemistry? It's just like you're in different stages of your life, right? And so it can be difficult necessarily to gain that kind of chemistry, especially when it's compounded by losing. And they were losing a lot. And this is also a lot of very prideful players. We're going back to Pascal and OG and Fred. They're all great players, right? In their own right. But sometimes the puzzle pieces just don't necessarily fit with all when you're trying to build a team. And I think that's what we were kind of seeing. They didn't have enough shooting. They didn't have enough skill versatility. They didn't have enough guard play. And so the seasons have gone the way they went. But, you know, now I think everyone kind of sees a vision, right? They're seeing that if we have a bunch of players who can, you know, run a pick and roll, who can pass the ball, who can shoot the ball, who can run in transition, who can cut off ball, who are willing screeners, you put that all together along with some intensity on the defensive end, some energy, some feistiness, you know, you might have something that could be pretty interesting, especially with, you know, I think they have overall, I think they have probably gained a bit more depth through these trades. You know, they haven't had a backup center for, I don't know, 3 seasons. And unfortunately, Christian Coloco drafted him a few years ago. He had some, I believe he's had some heart issues or lung issues. And so his current career has kind of, it's a bit of at a standstill, unfortunately. And they had to drop him, but he was probably going to be the guy that was looked at as like the center of the future. But, you know, he hasn't played at all this season. And I think he was put on waivers. So, but when that happens, like you think you have some depth at the center position and you don't, it just goes away. But they've done a good job of retooling through some of these trades. And, you know, I honestly think there is something kind of cool with what this team currently is, how good they can be. I mean, we're still figuring it out. Like, I think a lot of teams are adjusting to their new play style. And while it is a play style, I think that is, you know, it's a style that has consistency. It has some life to it. Eventually teams are going to, you know, game scheme around it, and it will be harder for them to score and to get, you know, kind of these possessions off as they are currently doing again, especially against the Pacers yesterday. But for the time being, I think it's interesting. I think fans are into it, and I think the players are buying into this, you know, instinctive cutting kind of style, read and react version of this offense.
How much of a pivot was the style, you know, transitioning from, you know, Coach Nick Nurse to Coach Darko now? I mean, how big of a shift has that been? I think the casual fan, or maybe just the fan who hasn't been watching the Raptors this year, I mean, kind of what folks hear, I think, with mainstream narratives is just everything with the Raptors right now is Scottie Barnes. It's all centered around him, which we know, of course, he was on the All-Star team. He's great. but what are you seeing with that system and how it differs from what they used to run under Coach Nurse?
You know, it's a stark difference. It's a pretty stark difference. And now this isn't against Nick Nurse. I think he looked at the crop of players that he had, and he felt like this was a way in which they could get good offensive possessions, you know, possession by possession, which I understood. I could see why he was feeling that way, but it was very stagnant. It didn't have a lot of off-ball movement. It was a lot of just like isolation, and then you create an edge, you create an advantage, you kick it out, swing, three, that kind of thing, penetrate, kick out, then you're able to get the defense in rotation. But with this style, it's, as I said, it's much more read and react. Like, you are relying on players understanding what the defense is throwing at them, being willing to make that, you know, quick penetration, kick it out, make that kick pass. And then you're hoping that the guy that you're passing to is going to, you know, shot fake, slight rip through, high rip through, low rip through, and then they're either going to take a shot, they're going to move on. And it's just like this constant cycle of motion that they're hoping to get from all the players on the court. And yesterday, probably against the Pacers, it was the best version we've seen of that. Obviously, you're facing the Pacers. Not a great defensive team, right? We got to keep that in mind. However, I saw a desire to just get into the next action, and they weren't getting into isolation. There wasn't a lot of stagnant ball movement. It was moving with purpose. It was moving with force. They were decisive. And when you're doing that, especially in a system like this, and you have players that can get downhill, and that's really important, right? You need players that can actually touch the paint, and then being able to, you know, force the defense to collapse, and you can kick it out. And then you need guys that can also read and react. And I think they're finding a nice blend of that currently. And players are kind of embracing it. And obviously the depth definitely helps. Them being able to go like legit, you know, 8 players, 9 players deep definitely helps right now.
Yeah, sounds like kind of a tough type of scheme for a younger team to put into place. I mean, do you think it is maybe kind of withheld wins at the start of the season, you know, kind of made it slow progress for them to learn that type of system?
Sure. And also, I mean, when it comes to a system, it is a system. And so you need players to buy into that system. That's why I mentioned buy-in earlier. I mean, Pascal, OG, even if they bought into the system, they may not have like the archetype to really thrive in something like that, which is about, you know, quick acceleration, being able to make quick movements and being able to cut and create advantages through your cutting with speed and the force that I mentioned. And they're just not really geared that way. They're a bit more methodical with how they run. Similar to Scotty Barnes, but Scotty is accompanied by, you know, RJ Barrett and Quickly and Gary Trent Jr. too. He's got a quick trigger. So you have a lot of players that can do things fast in whatever fashion that makes them successful. And when you pair that all together, you could have a system that looks kind of cool. Look at the pops. And they brought in Bruce Brown. He's been pretty good too. A bit up and down sometimes, sure. But I like his ability to make like these intuitive reads on the fly. Obviously his experience through, you know, the Nets and being a complimentary piece on a championship team like the Nuggets last season, it's definitely helped him. And he's been a pretty good addition, pretty consistent on that side of things. And then Kelly Olynyk, I mean, I can't say enough about him. He is a perfect fit for this system. I look at him and RJ Barrett, and I'm like, it's less like you found the matching glove, those two guys.
I want to ask you about Grady Dick. I think you did an interview with him, correct, on Summer League. And yeah. I was just struck by his poise and just his maturity of being Same. So young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's on a hot streak lately, shooting about 46% the last 16 games. Can you kind of explain where that swagger and confidence comes from and where you kind of see the ceiling for him?
Bro, he was born with it. And he's mentioned that he's gotten some of that swagger through his parents. His parents have been a heavy influence on his progress in basketball. And I think it's his ability to just move on to the next shot, right? And he mentioned that to me in Summer League. And he's saying the same things, you know, lately, is that, hey, like, I know I can make shots. I know I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to just keep on putting the work in, head down, and just keep on pushing forward. And that's all it is. Like, it's sometimes, you know, it is kind of that simple, that you just don't relent from the process. You rely on the process because you trust your process. And eventually you just hope that it's going to get figured out. And he did go on a conditioning stint midway through the season. He played with the team early on for a little while. He was sent down to the 905. It didn't go very well. And then he went on like a 2-week conditioning stint. And he has said that he feels a little bit stronger in his core, especially. And if you can imagine, like, you know, not having enough core strength or just like that extra boost of being able to keep balance on defense when you're running around screens, you're not being pushed off as much. You're able to maintain your 2 feet. Things like this do help a person, you know, shoot better. And it didn't really feel like it was ever a strength thing. It just felt like sometimes he was kind of aiming the ball or kind of like catapulting it. He does have kind of a high release and he wasn't getting the arc that he really needed. But, you know, lately, over the past, you know, 2-3 weeks or so, I think since like probably what, mid-January, since he came back, it's been pretty steady and he's making the shots that we thought he would make. And this is why the Raptors drafted him. They thought he would be an instant fit with the team that they had earlier on in the season, and that most of that team's gone now. Now with this version, like, he's great. He's been awesome. And, you know, his potential is, what could he be? I think something that's been thrown around is like, you know, peak Gordon Hayward. right? That kind of player. And that would be like really impressive because I think he's probably a better shooter than Gordon was, but you know, Hayward, man, like he was able to get downhill. He was able to cause havoc down there. He was able to push the pace and he was a big, great dribbler. I don't know if Grady has all of those things, but that's something to shoot for. And I think that'd be a tremendous player.
So I also want to ask you, Amit, just kind of changing gears to officiating has been a very hot topic within the last couple of weeks. I saw Darko's rant as well, just about the officiating. And we've interviewed some previous guests, and they've seemed to be of different thoughts about this. Some they think that maybe there's overreaction to the officiating, yet you see on mainstream media, there's a call for an overhaul in terms of removing just that officials report after the game has concluded. Where do you see the officiating now? Do you think it's a real problem, or do you think it's certain situations? Like, you follow the Raptors, is this a situation where it's actually hurting the product on the floor, or do you think people are overreacting?
I don't know. It's a good question. It's a hard thing to balance. I think sometimes I feel like officials are a little bit too sensitive with some of the players at points, where you got to let them kind of voice their opinion. You got to let them have their say at points. Like, there's a line to everything, but I think the line was a lot further away years ago. You know, officials would take it on the chin a little bit more. They would allow the player to say their piece and then they'd move on. But it doesn't seem like that's the case as much. And some of the technical fouls, like, I think part of it is the officials are just enforcing the rules, and the rules have changed. Like, there's some of the things that are in the fine print of the new NBA rule book. A lot of the officials, like, they're making the right call, but this is NBA decision and they're trying to, what a player might say is like, stifle emotion. They don't want guys beating on their chest. They don't want guys, you know, slapping the glass when they have a huge dunk. And I think they got to find a way to allow players to do that. Like, there has to be room for emotion. Like, you can't control some of these things. Like, in a playoff game, you have a huge dunk. It's game four. You're about to take a 3-1 lead. You slap the backboard. You pump your chest. You push your teammate or something like that. And you're just having, like, you're feeling the emotion of the crowd and the intensity of the moment. And then you get a tech, like, come on. You know, it's like things like that kind of bother me a little bit. But other than that, I think the officiating has been fairly consistent, and probably we're more so talking about the NBA looking at how players are guarded, or I guess not guarded really, because players have a lot of power these days. And defenses could certainly use a little bit of that back. You think about hand checking, whatever the rules are, like, you just have to kind of look at ways in which you can allow defenses to have some say in how a possession goes down and how they guard and how they help on defense, their center recovers, how they're able to make digs on drives, things like this. They do impact how much an offense is able to execute on that end of the court. And things like that could probably help. But other than the officials being a little bit too sensitive at points, I think it's okay. I think most of them are pretty cool, but then you just have your days. Like, I mean, Ben Taylor, right? Fred VanVleet, he had his famous quotes last season. That was ridiculous. Like, it was ridiculous in a way that I can't believe, like, how eloquently Fred just ripped this man. it was so funny.
Yeah, it was.
He was calm, cool, collected, but he ripped him to shreds, right? And then, yeah, this season with Darko, I remember that game too. That was a shame, as Darko said. It was a shame.
Yeah, I also wonder too, the other area, totally agree. I mean, great points there. The other area I still think is a problem for, you know, maybe the casual viewer. I find it a little bit tedious too, is like the last 2 to 3 minutes of ball games where things are just constantly stopping.
That's a good one too.
Kind of another thing on my wish list, but I think you're right in the sensitivity, especially when we were seeing those incidences with Anthony Edwards and Giannis earlier in the season where they were getting
those are wild, man.
Those
are wild stuff. Yeah.
Way too sensitive.
Yeah, that's a good point. The last 2 minutes of the game, that used to be an area where you'd let the teams kind of decide how things go. And it does feel like in that Raptor game against the Lakers where Darko had those quotes, that was a case, I think, where it felt like you can say this was a foul or that was a foul, but you can call a foul in every single possession if you really want to. Some at some point, just let the players decide how things are going to go. If there's something egregious, you know, a player gets slapped on the hand and it impedes him from making a shot, okay. But some of these ticky-tack things, especially when you know a team's in the bonus and it's going to impact the outcome of the game, like, yeah. I mean, it's a fine line. It's not a perfect system in that way, but I would like to see them make some small tweaks there as well. That's a good point.
So shifting gears to the rest of the Eastern Conference, pretty tight race at the moment. We've passed
in some parts, yes.
In some parts, yeah. We've asked some other guests in terms of how it's going to shake out in terms of the power teams. And we've seen kind of the 76ers, you know, with Joel Embiid battle injuries. You mentioned Trae Young. Like, where do you see it kind of shaping out? I mean, even the Heat, you know, they're struggling now, but you know the Heat are going to make some noise in the playoffs despite how the record's going to be. So where do you kind of
see four in a row? They're making noise.
They are.
They're doing pretty well, actually.
I guess what I mean is just their reputation in terms of just, you know, they're kind of up and down. So just where do you kind of see it kind of shaping? Do you see kind of the traditional power teams of the Celtics and the Bucks, or do you see kind of a new team emerging there, maybe the Cavaliers or somebody else?
Not the Cavaliers. I'm going to say that pretty firmly. I like their story. I would like to point out their record versus teams above 500. I don't have that right in front of me, but if you search it, you'll understand what I'm talking about. This was actually something that it's a parallel to some early DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry teams that they just feasted on every single team that was below 500. But you saw their record above 500. It was like, 500, a little under 500, a lot of games where they lost in crunch time. And then those are seasons where, hey, they lost in the second round. But outside of that, I mean, I don't want to make it be a bit of a cop-out here, but like the Knicks are really banged up. You just mentioned Joel Embiid. I think there are some reports that he could return in late March, but like what condition is he going to be in? The Miami Heat, I think they're bringing in Terry Rozier. I think it's a great addition for, he's kind of exactly what they needed as well. You know, they need some more punch with the punch in their scoring department. And Terry Rozier does that. He's a great isolation scorer. And just Eric Spoelstra is probably one of the best coaches in the NBA, if not the best coach in the NBA. Jimmy Butler, Bam, like there's something that's there. And also, I mean, they showed last season like that they can beat damn near anyone if they're healthy and they got Eric Spoelstra behind them. So you never want to count them out. Outside of that, I mean, we're talking Bucks, Celtics. It does feel like this might be the year the Celtics get over the hump. At least like they're going to the finals and assuming they're healthy. And then from there, I guess we'll see who they're facing. But Kristaps Porzingis has opened up so much for them. And the fact that they're able to bring in Drew Holiday, which in some ways kind of replaces Marcus Smart and what he was able to offer in some ways, not everything, but you know what I mean? That seems like a team that's like, and they're gearing up too. They won what, 8 in a row. They're kind of realizing too, that it's time to step it up and they're doing that. So the Knicks, I would like to see them healthy. If they're healthy, I think they could be a really fun team to watch in the playoffs. The Bucks, they're there. I don't know, man. It feels like we talk about team chemistry. I'm not sure where that team is currently. We'll talk maybe in 2 weeks and we can have a better idea. But I don't really trust Doc Rivers in playoff situations. The resume is there, not in a good way. So yeah. I don't have any reason really to trust him in that way. And if it came down to a Bucks versus Heat series, which I think would again be really fun, especially considering like the whole Dame thing where he wanted to go to the Heat and
true,
the Blazers wouldn't trade him there. They just said, nope, we're not going to do it. You're not going to go there. That simple. You're just not. We're just not going to do it. We're just not going to answer the phone. When Pat really calls us, we're not going to answer. That's what they did. Anyway, those kinds of teams are the ones that are catching my interest. And in terms of Pacers, I got to see more. Because again, defensively, I just mentioned like they're pretty porous at times. And if you want to be a team that goes deep in the playoffs, you got to be able to play at least a little bit of defense. And that's kind of it. I guess from that top six, I could see any team but the Cavaliers, if they're healthy, ending up in the conference final. But I still think the Celtics are the favorite.
Yeah, good analysis there. I have to ask your opinion, just as someone who watched Coach Nick Nurse, what are your thoughts on how he's done in Philadelphia so far in his tenure there?
Exactly what I thought he would do. right? Nick Nurse is a great coach. He maybe doesn't have the ear of every single player because of how hard he coaches sometimes. And I'm sure he learned some things from his time in Toronto and how things ended. From what I understand, there were a lot of players that are like, yeah, it's okay if he goes. We're fine with that. And maybe it was a need for, you know, a change of scenery from both ends. As Nick mentioned, I believe he was in Philly at the time too, last season, when he was asked about his coaching future. And he's like, you know, I've been in Toronto for a long time. I think he was in Philly when he said that too. Now he's a coach in the 76ers. I think he's done a bang up job, you know? And I mentioned like the system he had in last season with the Raptors and how I think he did it just because of the players he had versus what he thought, you know, what he could design and what he could aspire and what he could, you know, come up with is and his Nick Nurse, Matt scientist brain. There's a lot more there. And I think he's showing that this season. And it seems like, yeah, he learned a little bit from how things ended with the Raptors. Like Tyrese Maxey has said glowing reviews about him. I'm sure other players have said great things about Nurse. And I think he's, you know, he's learning probably to what's that line between pushing too hard with some players. And then you just factor in like he can scheme up any kind of design to stop a star player. I was listening to JJ Redick and Luka Doncic a few weeks ago, and JJ had Luka on, and you know, Luka was just talking about some of the defenses he's seen. And he's like, I've seen everything. I've seen I've seen box and one. And then JJ's like, who box and one you? And he's like, Toronto. And then JJ's like, Nick Nurse. He's like, yeah. Right. Like he doesn't care. He'll find a way to at least like that's his MO. He wants to stop the star player. He wants to make the second and third option player become a star. Right. And usually, you know, he's been right with that. And with the 76ers, if they're healthy, Joel Embiid is Joel Embiid, which is I'm not sure how likely it is that he's going to be that version of himself, considering everything. But if he is, like, they probably have the best player in every single series, arguably. Right. And that means something. And then you factor in his ability on defense. I think their depth is a little bit better. Buddy Hield's a great addition for them. They could use that movement shooting, just the deception and decoys you can get from Buddy. He's like a knockdown shooter. He's ridiculous. It could be fun. It could be fun. But again, we got to see who's healthy when it comes to playoff time.
Yeah, just wanted to also ask just what you've seen over the last several years with, you know, basketball culture in Canada and Toronto overall. Where is the fan base at? Does it feel like there's a pretty hardcore, well-established Raptors fan? You know, of course, we had like We Are the North trending for a while there when they had that core, you know, back in the 2010s. It's really grown. You know, there have been shows like, you know, No Dunks Now, but the Basketball Jones formerly that, I mean, one of their running bits was the Kenny Smith clip of Give Me Some Raptor News. You know, I'm sure you heard that, you know, which really, I mean, credit to the Raptors. I mean, they, as Justin mentioned earlier in the episode, I mean, they become a very, very credible, real NBA franchise, like legitimate. How are things looking? How is, you know, the fan outlook and maybe the fan numbers out there?
Yeah, the past few seasons have taken a bit of a hit in that area because of how they've gone. But at the same time, like, yeah, there is a rabid fan base here. The way they support the team now, I don't think is indicative of what the fan base is, because it is like it's from coast to coast, right? And it's truly like that. And any player that still comes by, and like they had, you know, training camp in Victoria, BC, and I was fortunate enough to go there at the beginning of the season. And like a lot of the new guys are like, they can't believe, like, we're so far, we're 5 hours away from Toronto. And here we have this, again, this huge fan base. It's a really cool thing for any player, right? To have like, you're the national team, right? Yeah. Truly. Right. So it's a different experience for a lot of these guys. And I mean, in terms of basketball in the country, it just continues to grow. Like, look at how many players are from Canada that are in the NBA, right? And it's just going to keep on going up. And these are your signs of, like, you know, some of the roots that Vince Carter, right? I mean, he's a bit of a polarizing figure in this country with how things ended, especially with, you know, nowadays. I think, I don't know if you guys saw, but a few days ago when he was asked, like, which jersey he would rock going into the Hall of Fame, if he does make it, he said the Raptors. And so that spurred some conversations around here. And me personally, like, he is irreplaceable to me. Yes, things didn't end the way they probably should have, at least for someone with his stature in my mind. But players like, you know, Corey Joseph, Jamal Murray, Tristan Thompson, Like, go down the line, some of those guys from that generation of Canadian basketball players, they're going to say Andrew Wiggins, they're going to say that their favorite player was Vince Carter. And like, he's the reason why they picked up a basketball. And it's just continuing. And that evolution of basketball within the country, especially on the women's side, they've been great. They just qualified for the Olympics. And now the men did for the first time since, I believe, 1994. You got Shea rocking, like, he's repping Canada hard. I hope he becomes a Raptor somehow, some way, at some point in his career. Jamal Murray, come on over. Either you guys could use some star power here. Yeah, it's just growing. I'll put it that way. And it would be great if the Raptors are able to get themselves into contention at some point in the near future. I don't think it's going to be this season or the season after, but after that, who knows? We'll see. But and we'll be able to see, you know, that crazy fan base side that I love so much, especially during those We the North days.
Man, to your point, I mean, Team Canada beating Team USA.
I mean, it was like the C team of Team USA, but I hear what you're saying. Yes.
Still.
Yeah. A win's a win, right? A win is a win is a win. Kyle Lowry famously said, a win is a win is a win. Doesn't matter how you get it, just get the win. And they got it.
Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Can you please let our audience know where they can find you on social media and then any other projects you're working on as well?
Yeah, man. So just on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, @Amit_man. And I'll be on the Raptor show over the next few weeks doing some co-hosting. So that's going to be coming up pretty soon. But that's kind of it. Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been fun.
Yeah. Likewise. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Boss Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.